Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello, hello, hello. No, I don't get mad. I get even.
Okay.
I call on you for every single question. That's how I get even.
She might not give you an answer.
Oh, it doesn't bother me. Wired. Can you hear me?
Double duty.
Oh, there you go. No, he's turning me on now. Ah, there I am. Now, it just woke Lloyd up too, yeah. Now he can hear me. You can sit there. You don't have to move. Oh, that's your spot?
Yeah, that's my spot.
Okay. Assigned seats. Okay. Worship. Pas deux. Last week, Doug went through the first part. I'm going to go through the second part. It kind of sets the stage for this quarter, though. We're going to talk about generally about worship, and then we're going to talk about specific elements of worship through the rest of the quarter. So that's kind of the structure. So, there was about three scriptures in the book, so I added a little bit to it. So we'll see how that goes this morning. See if you can follow where I'm going. You'll probably figure out where I'm going before I get there. So I went back into Exodus, and I looked at what they did for worship in a couple areas. Not overall, but in a couple areas. So this is out of Exodus 3. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of the bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to look, God called him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here am I. Then he said, do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. It may seem like a strange place to start with on worship, but it has some relevance. What's the importance of Mount Horeb? What's the importance of Mount Horeb? Holy ground. Anything else? Mountain of God? Mountain of God. Kind of what I was looking for. What form did the angel take?
A burning bush.
Blazing fire in the middle of the bush. Didn't it? Why did it change?
Because he heard that voice.
Well, he heard the voice. I mean, there was something that went on inside Moses' mind that changed the way he looked at the situation, right?
This is the God that his mother had taught him about.
It's the God his mother has taught him about?
He honored. And the God that he honored.
The God that he honored. He knew this is the true God that he tried to serve when he was in Egypt. So it went from a situation where it was, gee, this is kind of a weird situation, too. Oh, this is God. I'm in the presence of God.
That didn't change if you heard the voice come out. Then it changed.
So that changed the whole way he looked at the situation, didn't it? Okay. Changes the way we maybe look at worship. Okay. Moving on into chapter 27. Way into Exodus when he starts going through and he's getting the instructions on Mount Sinai, which is Mount Horeb. Or at least the same mountain range. He's getting what? When he's up there? Instructions from God. And this time, last time he said, don't come here. This time he's on the mountain getting instructions. So it's a little bit different. I don't know whether she was wrong or not. Yeah, grab one will come up. So you shall charge the sons of Israel that they bring clear oil of 8 olives of light. Make a lamp burn continually. In the tent of the meeting, outside the veil, which is before the testimony. Aaron and his son shall keep it in order from evening to morning before the Lord. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout their generations for the sons of Israel. So where is he receiving these instructions? I already told you that. What are they making with these instructions that are here? On this page. Specifically, what are they being instructed to on this page?
The lamp.
Okay. How to make a lampstand in the tabernacle. What did they do in the tabernacle?
Well, they kept this lamp burning.
They kept the lamp burning. Absolutely. Or they were supposed to. Yeah. Put it like that. They were supposed to keep the lamp burning.
That's why they needed oil.
Didn't they worship in there? Did they really worship anywhere else? No, they didn't in the Old Testament. Where's the lampstand located?
Tent of meeting outside the veil.
Which
is before the testimony. Now you're talking about the incense.
Which is before the testimony. A little bit plainer. It's outside the Holy Holies. It's outside the veil. And that reference there is it's outside of the Holy Holies. How long does it stay to live?
Continuously.
Perpetually. All the time. So moving on into Leviticus. This is the law for the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall remain on the hearth, on the altar, all night until the morning. And the fire on the altar is to be kept burning on it. The priest is to put on the linen robe. He shall put on his undergarments next to his flesh. And he shall take up the ashes to which the fire reduces the burnt offering on the altar and place them beside the altar. Then he shall take off his garments, put on other garments, and carry out the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. Fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not go out. But the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and he shall lay out the burnt offerings on it, and offer up in the smoke the fat portion of the peace offerings on it. Fire shall be kept burning continually on the altar. It is not to go out. So, there's a heavily studied book by us, right? Leviticus. When's the last time anybody read Leviticus? Yeah.
This spring.
Huh? Frequently? This spring? Good.
If it's daily Bible reading,
you go through Leviticus and Numbers. And Numbers is a hard one to go through. Especially if you do it late at night. So what are they being directed to do with these instructions?
Well, they're being told how to do burnt offerings.
How to do burnt offerings?
How how do people like going on the altar?
On the altar. The altar. Okay. Where the altar goes.
There being certain garments to wear when you do stuff. You got uniforms up there.
Uniforms?
These are specific instructions, very detailed instructions. It's
very detailed instructions on how to approach God, how to follow Him, how to worship Him. Okay? You burn it down inside the altar to when it's ashes. You take the ashes, you move them off to the side. You go change your clothes. You come back with a new change of clothes, you pick up the ashes, and you take them outside. That's a synopsis. But those are pretty detailed instructions. How long is it supposed to stay lit? All the time. Moving on and back into Exodus. Moreover, you shall place an altar as a place for burning incense. You shall make it of acacia wood. Its length shall be a cubit. Its width a cubit. It shall be a square. Makes sense if it's a cubit by a cubit. And its height shall be 2 cubits. Its horn shall be of 1 piece with it. You shall overlay it with pure gold, its top and its sides all around. And its horns, you shall make a gold molding all around for it. You shall make 2 gold rings for its upper molding, and you shall make them on its 2 side walls, on opposite sides, and they shall be holders for poles with which to carry it. You shall make the poles of acacia wood and overlay them with gold. So a little bit more about what's going on inside the holy place. So what are they making with these instructions? They're very specific about this thing. It's a cubit by 2 cubits. What is it?
It's an incense altar.
What do you burn in it? It's for the incense. What you burn the incense in? The big tray. It's a big tray. 18 inches by 18 inches by 3 feet high. That's a lot of incense, by the way. How prescriptive are these instructions? Very, very detailed. Okay, moving on. You shall put this altar in front of the veil that is near the Ark of the Testimony, in front of the mercy seat that is over the Ark of the Testimony where I will meet with you. Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it. He shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamps. When Aaron trims the lamps at twilight, he shall burn incense. There shall be perpetual incense before the Lord throughout your generations. You shall not offer any strange incense on this altar, or burnt offering, or meal offering, and you shall not pour out a drink offering on it. So let's get a little more details of what? Worship. Okay? How you approach God. Where's this tray supposed to go?
In front of the veil that's near the Ark of the Testimony. In front of the mercy seat that's over the Ark of the Testimony. Mm-hmm. Where you'll meet with you.
It's in front of the veil, near the Ark of the Testimony. What's the Ark of the Testimony we normally call it? Ark of the Covenant. Right? Okay? It's in the Holy of Holies. It's in front of the mercy seat. There's a purpose for it being there, by the way. Well, there's a purpose for everything there, but there's a purpose for that specific placement of the incense. And there's another reason why it's so big. Remember I said it was 1.5 by 1.5 by 3 feet? It's a lot of incense. There's a reason there's a lot of incense inside this tray. It's not a tray like you normally think. It's like a big, huge bucket. Does it refer to Aaron going into the Holy of Holies?
He's just got to go in there to trim the lamps at twilight.
Well, he trims the lamps, and that's in the holy place. That's not in the Holy of Holies.
He's got stuff to do with burns regularly and
he has to burn the incense on it. So, but it doesn't. Aaron shall burn. So it does talk about Aaron going in there. He's the only person allowed in. Only person allowed in. Oops. Okay, and how frequently do they burn it? Perpetually. Back into this one. Now Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, so these are his sons, Levite priests, took their respective firebrands and putting fire in them, placed incense on and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out of the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, "It is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all people, I will be honored." So you had all these prescriptive requirements. What'd they do wrong?
They didn't do what they were supposed to do.
They didn't do what they were supposed to do. There's a revelation there, Clayton. Mary, I went through all these details for a reason. Very prescriptive on what he wanted. What did they do wrong?
They didn't take it seriously.
They didn't take it seriously? What?
They
burned strange fire.
They didn't follow the instructions.
They didn't follow the instructions as God wanted to be worshipped. Okay. They didn't get the fire from the tabernacle. Remember, how much fire sources are there in the tabernacle? Two, right? The lamp. And remember what it said. We just read in there. The lamp, it said, get the fire. Use that fire from the lamp to burn the incense. To start the fire to burn the incense. But you also have fire in the altar. They didn't use that. Where'd they get the fire from?
It says strange fire.
It says strange fire. I've got a profound answer to this. We don't know. We have no clue. They just didn't get it where they were supposed to get it from. Is this an overreaction from God? Is this a big deal? Fire is fire, right?
No, it's not about the fire.
Not to these two guys, okay? He said, I want it done this way. You want to worship me? Me being God? Do it my way. And you can see the phrase out here. It says, by those who come near me, I will be treated as holy, and before all the people, I will be honored. They weren't honoring him. They were just, okay, you want fire, I'll get you fire. He was very prescriptive. Don't know what their intent was, but they were really wrong in the way they approached it. And it cost them their lives. Moving on, you shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. It shall be made with a cherubim, the work of a skillful workman. You shall hang it on the four pillars of acacia wood overlaid with gold, their hooks also being of gold, of four sockets of silver. And you shall hang up the veil under the clasp and shall bring in the ark of the testimony there within the veil. And the veil shall serve for you as a partition between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. So what are they making with these instructions?
I
can't hear you.
The divider.
Yeah, the divider. The curtain. This is a lot of instructions for a curtain, by the way.
It's all done in the wilderness.
Hmm?
All this was done in the wilderness?
Yes. Yes. This is, they had to take it down and put it up and take it down and put it up every time they moved. Yep. And you look at the workmanship that would have to go on. This curtain has woven into it cherubims. Images of, they know evidently what a cherubim looks like. You know, I'm not sure it's a fat little angel. But they weave that into there as far as what was in the curtain.
There were certain.
Yeah.
Put them back up.
And you know, that just thinking about that could be kind of tricky. Because if you took the veil down, you want to make sure that, you know, there's only one person allowed in the Holy of Holies, so you want to make sure you take it down the right way and you don't go where you're not supposed to go before you can go there. Don't ask me to say that again. Why is the veil significant?
God inspired.
What?
Because God required it as part of the instructions.
God required it as part of the instructions?
He separates the holy from the most holy.
Separates where God was versus where God wasn't. The holy and the holy?
It kept people out that he didn't want in.
That's right. It was a demarcation. Only Aaron could cross that line. Only Aaron. I'm going to have to move it along. You shall put the mercy seat in front of the ark, testimony of the Holy of Holies. It shall be the table outside the veil, and the lampstand opposite the table on the side of the tabernacle towards the south. And you shall put the table on the north side. You shall make a screen of the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver. You shall make five pillars of acacia for the screen and overlay them with gold, your hooks also being of gold, and you shall cast five sockets of bronze for them. So, what went in the Holy of Holies?
Ark of the Covenant.
Ark of the Covenant, okay. It's probably the biggest thing. We know also the incense censer, the big one, the big bucket one is in there. Now the Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, which he had approached the presence of the Lord and died. The Lord said to Moses, tell your brother Aaron that he shall not enter at any time in the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat, which is on the ark, or he will die. You okay? You okay? Oh. Okay. For I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. Aaron shall enter the holy place with this, with a bull for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering. He shall put on the holy linen tunic, and the linen undergarment shall be next to his body, and he shall be girded with a linen sash and attired with a linen turban. These are holy garments. Then he shall bathe his body in water and put them on. So, who went in the Holy of Holies? Aaron. It's easy. And God. I put him first. When did Aaron go in the Holy of Holies? Doesn't say, but I think everybody knows. Once a year? Day of Atonement. How much more did Aaron have to do be in the presence of God versus what Moses had to do? Whole bunch more, didn't he? I don't think I said a whole bunch more, substantially more. Had to have a very specific sacrifice. Could only do it once a year. It's very, very prescriptive on how he could approach God. He shall take from the congregation of the sons of Israel two male goats for a sin offering and one ram for a burnt offering. Then Aaron shall offer the bull of the sin offering, which is for himself, that he may make atonement for himself and his household. He shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the doorway of the tent of the meeting. Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other for the scapegoat. Then Aaron shall offer the goat on the lot on which the lot for the Lord fell, and shall make it a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot for the scapegoat fell shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it, to send it into the wilderness as a scapegoat. Before Aaron could offer these, what did he have to do? What'd you say, Wanda? I saw the white mouth movement, but didn't hear anything.
He had to do something before he could go in there. He had to offer it.
He had to offer the bull offering. I mean, this was at the tent, doorway. I mean, this wasn't even at the veil. This was to get into the holy place. Okay? The ceremonial cleansing that he had to go through, the bull offering that he had to just get in. Yeah. Very specific. What sacrifice was he offering then for the sins of the people?
Blood sacrifice.
Blood sacrifice. So was a bull is a bull blood sacrifice, but the goat. Right? One of two goats.
Two goats.
There's two goats, but one of the two goats he offered.
Cast lots.
Who picked which goat?
God did.
God did, okay? Cast lots, but it was the way God communicated with him to say, that goes. Okay, back in Leviticus. Then Aaron shall offer the bull of the sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his household. And he shall slaughter the bull of the sin offering, which is for himself. He shall take a fire pan full of coals of fire from upon the altar before the Lord, and two handfuls of finely ground sweet incense, and bring it inside the veil. So we've got this big censer that he's going to put these coals in, and also the incense in. He shall put the incense on the fire before the Lord, and the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the ark of the testimony. Otherwise, he will die. Moreover, he shall take some of the blood of the bull and sprinkle it with his finger on the mercy seat on the east side. Also, in front of the mercy seat, he shall sprinkle some of the blood with his finger 7 times. What did Mike, when he did his, what's 7 mean?
Complete.
Somebody said that. I heard of it.
Complete.
What was the purpose of the incense being burned in the fire pan in the Holy of Holies? Well, the smell, but that really wasn't the purpose. What happened when you burn all that incense? What probably you're going to get? You're going to get a lot of good smells, but you're going to get a bunch of smoke. What'd that smoke do? Covered the mercy seat. Why? Can't see God. If he sees God, what happens to Aaron? Even Aaron. He dies. Okay? So that's what the censer was there for, or the incense tray was there for, was to burn the incense to occlude, I think I even used the words occlude, to occlude the view of the mercy seat where God's going to be on top of the Ark of the Covenant. And if you were to see God, he would die. Then he shall slaughter the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people, and bring its blood inside the veil, and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, and sprinkle it on the mercy seat in the front of the mercy seat. He shall make atonement for the holy place because of the impurities of the sons of Israel, and because of their transgressions in regard to all their sins. And thus he shall do for the tent of the meeting which abides with them in the midst of their impurities. When he goes into to make atonement for the holy place, no one shall be in the tent of the meeting until he comes out, that he may make atonement for himself and for his household and for all the assembly of Israel. Then he shall go out to the altar that is before the Lord and make atonement for it. And he shall put some of the blood of the bull and some of the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar of all sides. With his finger he shall sprinkle some of the blood on it 7 times and cleanse it. And from the impurities of the sons of Israel, consecrate it. So what's he continuing to do here?
Give instructions.
They give instructions, but Aaron is more blood sacrifice. He did the bull, now he's done the goat. Very much the worship there was involving a blood sacrifice. Why? What'd you say, Mary?
For cleansing.
What'd you say, Linda?
Atonement for sins.
Okay. The only way that the priest could get into the presence of God was through a blood sacrifice. Which is what I just said. Okay, so recount. Temple worship. Lots and lots of rules. A whole bunch of rules. Very prescriptive. It was confined to one spot, right? Holy of Holies. You break the rules, you could die. There's only one person who could go in the Holy of Holies where, when God was there. There's one. What? The battery's dead. Which one? This one or this one? This one? This ought to be interesting. I'll turn this way. And approaching God, love this phrase, it was kind of tricky. If you did it the wrong way, you may die. Very, very prescriptive on how you did it. Imagine if you didn't put enough incense in that censer and didn't completely, you know, occlude the look under the mercy seat. So Old Testament worship is kind of limited, to really one person? I mean, they taught, but it wasn't like we have it here. And it was very, very constrained and very restrictive. And here I am again. Okay. Just put it in my pocket. So, going to this verse. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And the earth shook and the rocks were split. The tombs were opened and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. Well, now I've just jumped into the New Testament. What's just happened with Christ here?
Christ was the major atonement. There was no longer a barrier between us and God.
That's the summarization. What happened with Christ? What did he just do now?
He died.
He just died. Okay? And Linda talked about, what's the significance of the veil ripping?
Now you can go in front of God without doing all that funny stuff.
Now you can get in front of God without doing all that funny stuff. Now everybody can approach God. That's the big difference. You have one man who was the high priest who could approach God in the Holy of Holies once a year under strict rules and like that. Now you've got to, all of us can approach God because of a blood sacrifice. Aaron, hang on a second, I'll get to you. Aaron had to make that blood sacrifice. All his descendants had to make that blood sacrifice to be in the presence of God. But Jesus made that blood sacrifice so that we all could be in the presence of God. Susan?
Well, you were going right where I was. Jesus,
imagine that.
Jesus' death was the last blood sacrifice.
Yes.
It was the last one, which is what was very hard for them to accept.
Yeah, they were used to that routine. They were also used, and the leadership was used to that revenue stream, and it's different. It's really different now. It's open to everybody. And the veil, how it's ripped. Is that strange?
It was ripped from top to bottom. Normally, anything that rips from the bottom.
Yeah. The weakest part of supporting that veil was the bottom, because you've got all those clips across the top that are holding it. But it ripped from top to bottom. It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't just a freaky wind that ripped it. It was God that ripped it open because of Christ's sacrifice.
I feel that one reason why so many things happened at his death is that is a significant change in a 1,000-year lifestyle of blood sacrifices and all those traditions that they had encircled what worship was.
Yep.
And now, in an instant, that all changes.
Well, worship, almost no one had to worry about how they approached God and worshiped God because it was handled by the priest. Now, all of us come into the presence of God. But that kind of goes back to Moses when he saw the burning bush. You need to be respectful on how you approach God and approach him the way he wants to be approached, not the way you want to approach him. Otherwise, you fall to Nadab and Abihu, and what they did was, it won't be acceptable. He's not going to not strike you dead, but it won't be acceptable to God because he wants to be worshipped a certain way. How can we do that? What was I asking there? Oh, how can we approach God?
Prayer.
Through prayer? How about through the blood of Christ, the perfect sacrifice, which is, I think, what you were talking about and what Susan was talking about. How did that change worship?
No more blood sacrifices.
Because we had the perfect one.
He was the Son of God. You couldn't get through that.
Not only that, in a general sense, is you went away from what you did to worship in spirit and truth.
It worshiped in spirit and truth?
It became a personal thing.
It became personal. The temple was still the place of worship. But what was the temple radically changed?
See, before right? It was a duty. Yeah. Now it ain't a duty.
The radical change in temple
is that we are the,
is here.
You are the temple.
Okay, but I'm going to go into this one with the Pharisee woman first, because I think I've got time. It should take 5 minutes. Jesus answered and said, and he's talking to this woman, the Samaritan woman. Everyone who drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks the water that I will give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a well of water springing up eternal life. The woman said to him, Sir, give me this water, so I will not be thirsty, nor come all the way out here to draw. So she's out there at the well that Jacob had dug, and she's pulling the water up, and she's thirsty, and she's tired of doing this. And she says, okay. So what's the water? What water is Christ speaking to the Samaritan woman about?
Water of life.
Okay? Water that comes up through the Spirit. Because if that wellspring inside of you is His Spirit. Woman understand?
No.
No. Not at all. She doesn't have a clue. Okay. He said to her, go call your husband and come here. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said to her, You have correctly said, I have no husband. For you've had five husbands, and the one whom you have is not your husband. This you have said truly. The woman said to him, Sir, I perceive you are a prophet. So, what's the next subject Christ moves on to? Since she doesn't understand about the water. Her situation? She's an adulteress? She's an adulterous situation? I love this. What's her response?
She changes the subject.
She changes the subject. She moves on to something else. So he goes on. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain. And you people mean the people of the south, say that in Jerusalem is a place where men ought to worship. Jesus said to her, Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know. For salvation is from the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. That's what you had said, Clayton. For such people, the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know the Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. When that one comes, he will declare all things to us. Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. Imagine her eyes got really big at this particular point. So where did the Samaritans, or at least past history, where have they worshipped at?
On that mountain.
Go way, 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 way back. But kind of the dividing line in Israel that's in the north. Remember Rehoboam and Jeroboam? Where did he set something up? Anybody remember? Dan and Bethel. Because he didn't want them going down to Jerusalem because he said, okay, I'm going to lose my control. I want to keep them up here in the north. So who worshipped there in the place she's referring to on this mountain? Way back.
Jacob.
He dug the well. It's kind of a giveaway. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all of them worshipped in that general region on that mountain. How is it that worship will be different? Because he's talking about being different.
The way I look at it is...
Say what you said before.
Okay. The difference to me is the Old Testament, you have to. It's like a job. You have to earn it. The New Testament is you want to.
You want to.
It's the motivation.
I think Aaron wanted to please and all the priests too.
So it comes down to the motivation. So.
But you had said a phrase. Spirit and truth.
Right.
That's what he really wants.
Right. It's the same thing. I'm saying the same thing.
Spirit and truth. But the Spirit's in you. Big change. Okay. Where's the place that Jesus is referring to as far as worship? We talked. You did this earlier, Wendell.
The heart.
You. Going into this one, 1 Corinthians. Do you not know that you are a temple of God? And that the Spirit of God dwells in you. If any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, and that is what you are. Temple changed. Worship didn't. the rules, maybe all these different rules about the veil and the censers and all that changed. But the worship goes on in the temple. The temple changed. It's us. Big, big difference. As Susan was saying, Linda was saying, is this is a big change for the Jews. Okay? Now I personally have a temple. That's when, remember when he was on the cross and he said, you said you were going to raise this temple in 3 days. They were talking about a structure, and he was talking about himself. He was talking about temple, but they didn't understand it.
The apostles had to go out and convince them that they had killed the Lamb of God, and that that was the sacrifice. And that was rough.
The final sacrifice.
They had a lot of convincing to do.
Acts 2:38 talks about when they got up on the day of Pentecost, which would have been around this time of year. Actually, it's by Passover. Yeah, around this time of year. And spoke to everyone about what they had done. But it was necessary. But they were the responsible ones for killing the Christ. For giving the final blood sacrifice that was to end all blood sacrifices. So that we all could worship. So we would have an opportunity to worship. So where's the temple now? It's in those of us that have entered in through faith the gospel of Christ. His death, his burial, his resurrection. Who dwells in us that brings forth that fruit, that living water? Spirit. Spirit of God. Okay, who makes us holy so we can be the temple of God?
Blood of Jesus.
Blood of Jesus. His blood, the final blood sacrifice, just like it was all the way through the Old Testament, a blood sacrifice to make you pure so you can enter into the presence of God. Christ did once for all. Psalms. Shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful singing. Know that the Lord himself is God. It is he who has made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people, and the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him. Bless his name, for the Lord is good. His loving kindness is everlasting, and his faithfulness to all generations. So this is David, Psalm of David. So how do we approach God for worship?
Joyfully.
A lot of adjectives. Joyful. Gladness. Thanksgiving. Why?
Because he gave his only begotten son that we could have that relationship.
He gave his ultimate sacrifice to the son so we could do it. Okay? He's loving. He's kind. He's faithful. All his people. He fulfilled his promises, even going back to Abraham, where he said, through your seed, all mankind will be blessed. And when he talked to Adam and Eve in the garden, and he said, through your seed, he will be bruised. His head will be bruised. And that's what he was talking about. That's how he opened up us as the temple, so we could worship.
Sin includes all generations.
Excuse me?
All generations.
For all generations, that's right. Everybody, all generations. Questions, comments? Good.
You know, when we look at the Old Testament and study it and see how really complex it was, and then we look at what the final objective was for as God's plan of man, bringing Jesus. We see how they intertwine a lot. You know, Jesus is our high priest, and we go to God the Father through him. You know, and unlike the old law that was primarily Jews, this is for all generations, which was God's promise.
To Abraham was to all generations. Yeah. There's you can see where he's helping everybody to understand that blood sacrifice, that ultimate blood sacrifice of perfection was required to get the sacrifice that we needed to be in the presence of God. The problem was, is everybody looked at it as that was the end game. Temple worship in the Old Testament was not the end game. Christ was the end game. And they really didn't understand that. Next week, using God's Word. Part one. Those are all the references to it. I think it's your week. So we'll be going through there. One book, Nehemiah. We don't go through Nehemiah a lot, but we go through a lot of the other New Testament books quite a bit.
This lesson reminds me of what the Apostle Paul said about these things are written for our learning. And going through this and seeing how we worship today, you can see how important following the details were.
Yeah.
Very clearly pointed out, you know, that God wants us to follow His Word and follow His instructions.
Yep.
When God wrote down directions, He was very technical. Think about Noah.
Oh, yeah.
He was very technical with what He wanted done.
He was very, very specific. He's very specific. Now, when you look at the New Testament, He gives us guidance on what He wants. But it isn't anywhere near the detail that you see in the Old Testament. But where's everything supposed to be? He has two commandments that He wants us to follow. Love God with all your heart, all soul, your mind. And the others like that? Love your brother as you love yourself. Everything else is built on that. Thank you.